KLYT Broadcast Studios. This is ABQ Connect with Jim Williams.
ABQ Connect is sponsored in part by Bosque Home Services, heating, cooling, plumbing, roofing, and restoration services. 505-444-7200. That's 505-444-7200. Or on the web at HVACAlbuquerqueNM.com. Bosque Home Services, locally grown, locally owned. Thank you for your support of KLYT and our show, ABQ Connect. And we're going to be talking about taxes today with our friend Brian Cochran. Brian is a certified Kingdom advisor and president of John Moore Associates, and financial planning entails tax planning, Brian.
Unfortunately, yes.
Yes.
The bill comes due every year, and I want to start with the reminder I always have to tell myself. I just paid my quarterly estimated taxes this week, and I have to write those checks and say to myself, taxes are symptomatic of God's provision. And just repeat that as I write my checks to New Mexico and Arizona and the federal government, and giving up opportunities I would have to live and give on that money, but instead it goes to taxes.
As you're saying that, I'm thinking about people that say, oh man, I didn't pay any taxes this year, I'm getting a big refund. They don't even realize that they've paid a bunch of taxes. And if you're getting a big refund, that means you've loaned the government some money for the last 12 months.
Right, right. And especially in times when either tax codes are changing or your personal situation is changing, we constantly see clients getting big tax refunds, which is a big no-no. You know, you can usually find a better use for that money rather than loaning it to the government for free until next April.
So we have a new president in the White House this year of 2021, and he's proposing a bunch of tax changes. Let me ask you first, before anything, as you talk, what were the goals that the administration has in mind? I think it's always, maybe I'm wrong, but it's always to generate more money for the government.
Right. So the current proposals in place are designed to generate more revenue to fund more social programs. That's the high level. To simplify it, the general theme is tax the rich. That's the simple terms. And most of what we'll talk about today that's been proposed is very targeted at the highest income households. Mm-hmm. And we'll talk about some benefits that are designed to benefit certain households as well. But a very different theme and a very different motivation than what we had under the previous administration with tax law that was passed back in 2017.
So if you're listening to the show today, and we have different levels of income represented by our audience, so a lot of things that Brian's going to give you, a lot of the data he's going to talk about, you're going to be surprised at, because I was really surprised when you sent this to me in preparation for the show.
Yeah, and I thought we'd set the stage before we talk about what's proposed that could be new tax law that might be passed as we wrap up 2021. I thought we'd talk about first, how did we get where we are today and who's paying how much under the current code, which again was put in place in 2017 under the previous administration when we had Republican Congress, Republican president. And at that time, there was a tax reduction bill. It was called the Tax Cut and Jobs Act. Of 2017. Some people call it the Trump tax reform. Mm-hmm. But there was a lot that changed there. And when that tax settled, that tax law settled, what we really ended up with was a little bit lower rate for the wealthy. We had a whole change in how itemized deductions were calculated and how much you needed to be able to itemize. Lots of little changes. So really 2018 is the last really good year we have for comprehensive tax data. And that was the first year under that Tax Cut and Jobs Act. So we can kind of start to see what happened, you know, who paid more, who paid less, and what happened when the dust settled from that new legislation.
So as you go through this, it's interesting that the data that's available is only updated to 2018, because the claims the politicians made in 2020 during the presidential election or prior to was all claiming this and claiming that. And you can see by this actual data that a lot of what they represented was not true.
Yeah, there's definitely a constant source of misinformation from both sides when it comes to taxes about who's paying what and what needs to happen. So I'm not going to try to be too partisan with this. I certainly have my political opinions, and Jim, you have yours, and all the listeners have their own personal perspectives. But what I like to do is push that away and look at the hard data and see what we can discern from that.
So set this up for us.
Yeah, so a couple things that stood out to me in looking at the data. So again, when we're talking about data. This is mostly 2018, which was the first year under the current tax code that we have that was passed in 2017. So at that time, if you want to talk about the quote unquote rich, the way that's typically been defined is people 400,000 or 500,000 or more as household income. So if you look at 2018, there were about 1.6 million Americans that filed over 500,000 of tax of income in 2018. 1.6 million. That's about 1% of households. So talking about the rich, talking about the 1%, let's talk about 1.6 million with had income over that level. They earned 20% of all income that was reported in 2018. Now, what a lot of people say is, whoa, the 1% took 21% of the income? Well, they better be paying their fair share. You hear that term a lot, their fair share. Well, they paid 41% of all the federal income taxes that year.
Wow.
So they earned 21% of the income. Yes, certainly a overweighted sleeve of the income for that 1%, but they also paid 40% of the taxes from just 1% of all households that filed.
Brian, can I stop you for one second?
Please.
Because I want to point out, I know you don't want this to be a political thing, but there has been misinformation that the Republican Party is against having a high proportion of taxes paid by wealthy individuals. This data would indicate that is not true.
Right. And what you look for in the tax code is something called a progressive tax system, where those with low income pay less, those with high income pay more. And I think one of the big pieces of misinformation is to act like we don't already have a progressive tax system. When you have 1% of all taxpayers paying 40% of the tax burden, that is a progressive tax system. To give you an idea, if we looked at the smallest income earners, so these are folks that as a household earn $0 to $50,000. This could be anything from a 21-year-old coming out of college and just working, you know, his or her first job, but it also could be low-income couples who are scraping by and trying to provide for their family. There were about 89 million households that filed in that zero to 50,000 range in 2018. Okay. So pretty good percentage of the population fit in that group. That's about 58% of all tax filing households fit in that zero to $50,000 range for income. So pretty substantial portion. So that 58% of the income earners paid 4.2% of all income taxes. So you've got the 1% paying 40%. The bottom almost 60% pay about 4% of all income taxes.
But then again, you hear politically.
Right.
We want the middle class to pay less taxes. Well, they're already paying only 4.2% of the taxes.
Right. And some people say, well, that's probably the lower class. Let them pay less. And I don't see how you could really argue that. Again, we want a progressive tax system. If you look at the group that makes 50 to 100,000, they pay about 12% of all income taxes. So still, you know, a small group, you know, or a small percentage of taxes paid by everyone making under 100,000. So I think there's a lot of misinformation out there that somehow the bottom half are carrying the top half, and certainly that's not the case. If you want to argue for higher taxes, if you think the top 1% should pay more than 40%, great. But what I've seen when you talk to people about this a lot of time, they assume that the top 1% is paying 10% of taxes or less. They don't understand that they're carrying almost half the tax burden with just the 1%.
Well, I think you hear statements like the rich never pay taxes, don't
right.
you? Don't you hear that?
And I think one of the best ways to look at that is if you look at how much people pay in taxes as a percentage of their total income, that kind of tells the story of who's paying how much relative to their income. And so I can't tell you how many times I've heard people say something along the lines of, you know, you've got CEOs that are paying less tax than the person, you know, the maintenance person, the janitor, the custodian. And that's simply not true. They try to find rare cases, you know, where there's a high net worth person paying low taxes. But on the whole, though that top 1%, again, these are people making over 500,000, they paid about 21, almost 22% of their income towards taxes in 2018. That was actually a higher percentage than they paid in 2017 before these supposed tax cuts. So they're paying one out of every $5 they earn is going towards taxes. The bottom, that zero to 50,000 range, they're paying about 15% of their income towards taxes. So certainly the top is, again, paying more. We have a very progressive system in that sense. And I think it's working overall. And what we saw economically as a result of the Tax Cuts and Jobs Act is a lot of people thought the economy in 2017, after, you know, 8 years coming off the financial crisis, that the economy was sort of at full employment. There wasn't much, you know, headway to be made. There wasn't much to be gained with new jobs or economic growth. But what we actually saw is we had significant job growth over those next couple of years. And maybe more importantly, we had wage growth, meaning that people were earning higher and higher wages. In 2019, the year before the pandemic, we saw substantial wage growth, especially in the bottom 20% of income earners and especially amongst minorities. So, you know, a lot of people were worried that this tax reform would set back the lower income households, and it certainly didn't happen. There were more minorities and low income people employed than ever. They were growing their income at a rate that was the fastest we'd seen since before the financial crisis. So it didn't necessarily put us a big step backwards. And you can debate whether or not this really helped stimulate the economy, but we did have significant economic growth in 2018, 2019, really leading right up to the economic shutdowns associated with COVID.
So, Brian, I'm thinking back to a year ago when you were on the show, and you were calming our fears about a new administration coming in and don't vote your or don't invest your politics, and you've told us a lot of different things. And this data really does indicate that, look, these are similar to what was in place under the Trump administration, maybe a little bit higher capital gains and some things. We're going to talk about that in a minute. But I'm really amazed by the bottom 58% of wage earners only pay 0.6% of their income to taxes.
Right.
And 25% of those wealthy people that are in the upper 1%. So what you hear is really already in place.
Right.
What they want to do is already in place.
How do you get more progressive? And I need to go back. Yeah, I mentioned before what I was saying before when I said that the wealthy pay 20%. That means that they actually earn 20% of all the income. Mm. So you're right. So if you look at the tax burden, so again, like you said, that 0 to 50,000 income tier is paying less than 1% of their income, and they paid less income taxes after the Tax Cuts and Jobs Act, whereas high-income earners pay about a quarter of everything they earn. So that was a correction over what I mentioned before. Just get my numbers crossed a little bit there. The group that had the biggest reduction in tax as a percentage of their income as a result of that tax reform was sort of that high-income, upper-middle class, if you will, that makes $200,000 to $500,000 income. That was the group that really seemed to benefit the most from the Tax Cuts and Jobs Act. But to think that somehow the burden was shifted to the lower income is definitely not accurate. If you're hearing someone say that Trump moved taxes from the wealthy to the poor, that's simply not true. The low-income households paid a lower percentage of their income towards taxes, and we ask very little of them as far as a percentage of their earnings now. So like you said, yeah, we're already in a very progressive system. Any, you know, increase to taxes on the wealthy right now would be just, you know, expanding upon that, making it even more progressive.
I'm thinking another thing that I hear in the media all the time is that these really wealthy people like the Bezoses and those, these rich corporations never pay any taxes. You hear that all the time.
Right.
And you've explained that, you know, having worth in your stock and selling stock and generating cash and things doesn't go into anybody's pocket. It's not personal income.
Right. So what people often associate there is they'll talk about Jeff Bezos as the CEO of Amazon and worth billions upon billions of dollars in net worth. Well, that doesn't mean he's making billions of dollars a year of income. The reason his net worth is so high is Amazon as a company continues to expand its products and services, and it's growing in value. And so his net worth is growing, but he's not necessarily taking on a lot of income unless he decides to dispose of some of that stock. He doesn't have a high salary for his role. And then companies like Amazon, people say, well, how can Amazon pay no tax? Well, if you're a company and you sell goods and services and you take in that income, and all the income you use for expenses, expenses like wages, benefits, mergers and acquisitions, product development, all these different expenses associated with running your business, which we want companies to do, right? We want them to spend and invest in their people and in products and services that then help other businesses thrive. If you spend all the money you bring in, then you don't have taxes because you don't have profits. Mm-hmm. And we only tax profits. So that's the misunderstanding there. Oh, Amazon doesn't pay taxes. Well, to the extent that they invest everything that they earn, yeah, they don't make profits. And that's true. If you If you and I go out and open a business tomorrow and we're scraping by and we're spending everything we're making, we wouldn't pay tax either because we'd be investing everything that comes in. And we don't want to discourage that. We want corporations to reinvest. That's how they spread the wealth amongst the communities that they're in.
Well, Brian, you've kind of recapped for us what led up to the time that we're in now. And now there's some revisions to the tax code that we're going to talk about. But when we come back, the first question I'm going to ask you is about how you use this data in your financial planning for people. We'll be right back on ABQ Connect with Brian Cochran. He's a certified Kingdom advisor and the president of John Moore Associates. And before we leave, Brian, I have to say thank you so much for supporting the ministry here at KLYT. You guys have done a lot to help us, and just the investment of time that you have every week with us is really appreciated.
Always my pleasure.
We will be back with Brian Cochran right after these messages.
Here's John Chitwood with an automotive analogy.
Wouldn't you agree that most people have never even read the small owner's manual that's found in the glove box of all their vehicles? That is because they think they know it already and will only open and read it in a time of an emergency. Sound familiar? There is an owner's manual that you do need to read and memorize. It's God's written word, the Bible. God is the creator and the designer, and in the Bible you will find God's design and purpose for your life and how he made a way of salvation for you and me, that we may have eternal life with him through his son Jesus Christ. Let us remember what David said in Psalm 119, "Your word I have hidden in my heart that I might not sin against you."
An automotive analogy with John Chitwood of Southern Boulevard Automotive, 2300 Southern Boulevard in Rio Rancho, 892-2300, or southernblvdautomotive.com. Thank you, Southern Boulevard Automotive, for your support of KLYT.
Here's your chance to win a pair of tickets to the Toby Mac Hits Deep Tour, coming to the Rio Rancho Event Center on Friday, February 11th. Today's code word is Bernalillo. Text it now to 585-LIVE. That's 505-585-5483. Winners will be selected at random on Friday, September 24th.
You're listening to KLYT. Welcome back to ABQ Connect with Jim Williams.
We want to thank Ben Lucero and Indigo Mortgage for supporting the ministry of KLYT and ABQ Connect. Indigo Mortgage, 505-836-5700. That's 505-836-5700, or on the web at indigomortgage.net. Thank you, Indigo Mortgage, for your support of KLYT and ABQ Connect. We are with John Moore Associates President and Kingdom Advisor Brian Cochran. You can go to johnmoore.com and find out a lot of free information on their Insights tab, and including a lot of the shows that we do. And you've got webinars. You have all kinds of things that are free for people to listen to.
Absolutely. And a very timely one that's coming up. We just had to shift the time on it, but on the 29th, I believe at 1 o'clock is when we're going to have it. And we'll have this up on the website soon. We're going to have Ed Mills, who's the senior political analyst for Raymond James, a large national investment firm. He's going to be live with us to present on what's changing, what policies are going on in Washington, D.C., and how they might affect the economy and markets. And very timely, because we're getting new tax information just this week, so I'm sure he's going to address that.
So you've talked about the tax code up to this date, and now you're going to tell us about a lot of the changes and how that will affect people. But tell us what to keep in mind about financial planning with this information.
Right. So as a financial planner, what we look at for taxes, acknowledging that most income will be taxed. There's very few exceptions where you can get around having your income taxed. So we try to look for strategies. A lot of it's about timing when you receive income. So what we've been doing the last few years, understanding that the Tax Cut and Jobs Act, it really reduced the tax liability for a lot of the families we serve. We were actually accelerating income over the last few years, advancing income with the anticipation that new tax reform would come someday that would increase tax rates. So if I could choose to pay a dollar now or a dollar 20 later in taxes, I would rather pay the dollar now in many cases. So that's what we've been working on with a lot of our clients, is looking for years where their income's lower. And that's a nice opportunity combined with the current low tax rate to accelerate income and plan for that. But to do that, you have to have an intentional strategy. You often collaborate with a great tax advisor. There's many in the area that we can recommend for clients. And then you also have to have a plan for the future to understand how will this money be used down the road. You put all those things together and you can be more intentional about how you plan for taxes.
And Brian, being a certified Kingdom advisor yourself, there are other professionals, accountants. Are there attorneys that are certified Kingdom advisors as well?
There are, yeah. And there are some that are certified Kingdom advisors and some that we just know really honor and understand biblical principles that may not have the certification. So either way, we get to combine our services with people who share our values.
What if you're listening to the program today and you're not quite sure if that Bible is what you want to adapt, but you're still interested in working with John Moore Associates?
Yeah, probably a good 40% or more of our clients are non-believers. And so the beauty of it, though, is we get to use the same biblical principles, and we're overt with our clients, whether they're believers or not, that we're using biblical principles. And we like to say that any good advisor, whether they're a believer or not, is probably using biblical principles. They just don't know that's what they are. Mm-hmm. So we still get to apply the same strategies and principles and beliefs. We just maybe aren't quite as forward with the faith part of the conversation.
So the new tax, proposed tax revisions are definitely ensuring we're taxing the rich.
Right. That's the primary motivation. And as we just made the case, we are already taxing the rich far, far more than we are the lower and lower middle class folks. But they want to increase that tax. Part of that is the idea that the wealthy have had a higher growth in their net worth, especially over the last 10 years. I would say that's not really a tax policy that's allowed that. That's more of a Federal Reserve policy, a conversation for another 3-hour segment that we might have put together for that topic. But basically, they're trying to do a bit of a reset with how income is spread across the country by taking more from the wealthy and then increasing the programs that go to lower income families. And so generally what we've seen from the Biden administration all the way back to their campaigns last year is when we say rich, they're thinking $400,000 or more for a single person and $450,000 or more for a married couple in most cases. Most of the time we talk about the rich, those are the thresholds they're looking at. So they're trying not to increase the income taxes for people below that level, but definitely jump up the taxes that that higher income level pays.
How are the tax brackets going to change now?
So that's one of the first changes. So part of the 2017 Trump tax cuts was to lower the tax rate on the top income earners. And so that went from about 39.6% down to 37%. So what the Biden proposal would do, it would increase the rate back to the previous rate, so go back to 39.6, but also it would have that 39.6% rate start at a much lower level. So for example, right now, the top tax rate for a married couple is about $628,000 of income. Anything beyond that, you're paying 37%. Under the Biden proposal, if you have over $450,000 in income as a married couple, you're paying now 39.6% as a starting rate. We'll talk about some other little add-ons that they want to put on top of that. But so you're looking at, you know, not a huge percentage increase, but if you're one of those people that's above $500,000 of income, you're getting taxed at a higher rate on more of your income.
Brian, I know this is not on our list today, but I just can't help but think about it. We're all paying into Social Security.
Mm-hmm.
And yet we hear about the Social Security system is basically bankrupting itself. Now, you might explain that Social Security is actually not a funded benefit. It's actually just a line item on the budget.
Right.
And so we are coming out of, is it correct to say we're coming out of cash to pay that every year?
Yeah, there is revenue that comes in because anyone right. who's earning income and wages is paying in, as the employers are paying in.
But
there's
not
a big bank account sitting there.
In other words, when they take it out of your check, it's not going into a bank account managed by an investment firm that's right. investing it, and there's a return on your investment. It's simply going to pay. In some ways, it kind of sounds like a building a card building where you're literally about to crash any minute if you don't have enough income from all the taxpayers to pay the benefits that you're currently paying out.
Yeah, and thankfully for the Social Security wages, the generation behind the baby boomers is even bigger than the boomers generation. So we have a lot of income earners coming up in the ranks. That's one piece that I was actually surprised isn't addressed here. People don't want to play with the Social Security calculations too much, but that's inevitable. At some point, we will have Social Security reform. A lot of people don't realize that actually Social Security was not in good shape in the early 80s, And during the Reagan administration, they passed legislation, but that legislation didn't really take effect until, you know, 20 plus years later, but helped keep the Social Security system well funded so that your generation can enjoy it. My expectation that I set for clients is, whereas right now the retirement age is 67 for Social Security, I tell my younger clients, people under 40, just plan on taking Social Security at 70 at the earliest, because they'll probably have to move that back because life expectancy is so long. But that is one piece that I was surprised is completely unaddressed in this tax reform, is there's been talk of increasing Social Security taxes on the wealthy, and that didn't quite make it in on this one. Not to say that it won't come back later.
I think back maybe first quarter, you were anticipating that the capital gains tax might increase pretty significantly from about 20% up to maybe as high as 40%, maybe even 50%.
Yeah, so Biden's proposal during his campaign and since then has been that he wanted the top income taxpayers to pay capital gains at the same rate that they pay income. And we just talked about he wants the top taxpayers paying almost 40% income. There's sort of a sweet spot there that, you know, research has shown, history has shown that if you put that tax rate too high, you'll actually get less revenue, because if the tax rate's too high, people simply won't generate the capital gains because they won't sell assets if they lose too much to taxes. So I think they wisely brought that down. So that was another part of this, is right now the top capital gains rate is 20%, and they've proposed moving that to 25%. Again, for those top income earners, that's if you're over $450,000 of income as a married couple, you start to pay a 25% capital gains rate, which, I mean, that's, if it used to be 20, that's a 25% increase.
Now, Brian, I know that there's all kinds of vehicles for, like, people that are selling real estate. They do 1031 exchanges, mm-hmm. and other kinds of things. Is there any way to protect yourself, like if you're selling stocks and those kind of things, from tax?
Well, the first thing to do is try to maximize your tax-advantaged vehicles, things like 401ks, IRAs, Roth IRAs, because those don't incur capital gains as you trade within them. So that can help defer taxes to the future. So we always want to check that box first. So if you're not fully taking advantage of your employer-sponsored 401k, 403b, some of these really tax-advantaged tools, that's a great place to start. Otherwise, it goes back to the idea of just being wise, so looking at tax loss harvesting opportunities. So if you've incurred some capital gains, looking across your assets, seeing what you might be able to sell that could incur a loss that would offset that gain. That's one big piece we see a lot. We often give away our most appreciated assets. So if we have a client who's charitably inclined, which most of ours are, we will typically look for our most appreciated assets where there's the most potential for capital gain. And rather than them selling that asset, we will use that to satisfy their giving. And they can give that asset to a charity who would not have to pay any tax on that gain.
And there were some recent changes within the last year to motivate people to give to charities because of COVID.
Right. So there's a potential to give up to 100% of your adjusted gross income for the year to charities. So there's some, you know, that hasn't been extended yet. We're hoping it will be. But it's given us some opportunities to do some really fun, creative tax planning.
Can charitable organizations invest money?
They can, and they often should, because they're stewards and they should set some assets aside for the future. And one of the benefits is that they can have an asset appreciate, sell an appreciated asset and not pay the gains. So you'll often see that in the form of an endowment or some sort of a long-term asset that's meant to support future programs and spending. So we actually have a few nonprofit clients that we get to serve and help them make wise investment decisions to keep their ministries and organizations running.
I've had some interesting conversations with people about, like, Calvary Church and mm-hmm. other nonprofits, because I have a lot of nonprofits on the show, and they're confused as to what not-for-profit means. And I try to explain to them, I said, look, a not-for-profit agency has to bring in more revenue than they spend, just like a for-profit business. It's just that those assets, whatever gains they have, are not owned by an individual.
Right.
They're owned by the community.
Yeah, if a company does the same thing, if they take in more than they spend, then those earnings become profits that get generated and distributed to the owner. Yeah, and in a nonprofit situation, they don't have that step. So this capital gains idea is a big one. It's definitely a relief that it wasn't, you know, this proposal doesn't have what Biden was originally suggesting, because I think that would have been not only very restrictive for some high-income earners who are selling assets, but also I think it would have been counterproductive, because it would not have increased revenues like they're hoping.
Have any of these decisions already had a positive effect on the investment markets, or are the investment markets pretty steady?
I think there was a little bit of an uptick the day that this information came out. Some people said that was a relief that the taxes weren't as aggressive. So most of what we're talking about here is not nearly as aggressive as what some Democrats were proposing over the last couple of years. So there's almost like a sigh of relief in a sense. I think a 25% capital gain rate is unfortunate for those who are going to get hit with that rate, but it certainly is not as restrictive as a 40% gain rate. So I think there was a little bit of relief. It certainly wasn't seen as a negative in terms of investment markets.
Yeah. John Moore, Associates President, Brian Cochran in studio with us today. Hope you'll stay with us. He'll be with us up until 2 o'clock. Well, we'll be back on ABQ Connect right after these messages.
Albuquerque and Route 66. They go way back.
A lot of people drove through here hoping for a better life. Now, the Route 66 God Loves You Tour is bringing hope to Albuquerque, featuring artists like the Newsboys and Marcos Witt, and a message from Franklin Graham.
Remember this, God loves you.
Bring a friend to the Route 66 God Loves You Tour, coming to Expo New Mexico, Tuesday, September 28th. Learn more at GodLovesYouTour.com.
Have you ever dreamt of a career in radio? Do you have a passion to serve Jesus? Well, at KLYT, we're looking to hire a few part-time board operator positions, and you could be the candidate we're looking for. As we return to normal, our need for help has only increased. Whether engineering live services from Calvary Church, assisting with production, or being involved with events, this could be your opportunity to serve in ministry while also getting on-the-job training in radio. Shoot us your resume online at calvarynm.church/jobs.
Joel Rosenberg has his finger on the pulse of the epicenter of world events. Joel lives in Jerusalem and has access to discussions with princes, prime ministers, and presidents. He will be speaking at Calvary Church Wednesday night, September 22nd.
It's interesting to hear a now former prime minister explaining why is apocalyptic Islam so much different and so much more dangerous than what most people think of when they think of radical Islam. So all of that is in this new book, and I hope it's helpful, because I think a lot of Christians, they know they ought to know more about the Middle East than they do, but it's a complicated puzzle to put together.
You need to hear what Joel has to say about turbulent current events. Joel has met recently with the former Prime Minister of Israel, talked with sources such as Mike Pompeo, and released a new nonfiction book about the Middle East. Do not miss what he has to say, Wednesday at Calvary.
You're listening to KLYT. Welcome back to ABQ Connect with Jim Williams.
Brian Cochran, the president of John Moore Associates. He's a certified kingdom advisor. He has been working his way all the way up. We had a nice talk about continuity and how you worked closely with your mentor, John Moore, and you took over the company. And that was really interesting, Brian. And I think people that are listening today, maybe people that are lower wage earners, but maybe younger couples that want to save money and they want to start investing, they may think in their minds, gee, people that are 60 years old and may have $500,000 in the bank, they really understand these concepts. It's not true, is it?
Right. And I've been amazed over the years. I've been doing this for 15 years now, and I've seen everything from people with very low incomes and moderate incomes that have generated incredible wealth because they're just shockingly, you know, wise with their money and they make great decisions. And they come in my office and I go, I don't even know how I can help you. You're doing everything right. Congratulations. And we might just enhance their situation a little bit to people who make, you know, really good incomes because they're great professionals in their industries and careers. And, but they don't really understand what to do with money. And the key thing there is, biblical principles are timeless and transcendent. So they'll always be true. And they work for people at all levels. So that's the beauty of us leaning on biblical principles, is whether it's a single 25-year-old in my office or a retiring 70-year-old, I might apply the principles a little bit differently, but the principles are the same. And the second thing is, we are all still emotional. So much of what we do wrong with finances is based on emotional reactions. And I don't care how smart you are. I don't care what PhD you have. You're still a human with a functioning brain, which means you're going to have emotional response with money. And so much of what we do is about behavioral finance, making bad emotional decisions with money. And you're almost more liable for that the more wealth you have, because the scales are greater and often the emotional rides are greater as well. So, yeah, just because someone has a lot of wealth doesn't always mean they're making the best money decisions. And just because someone doesn't have a lot doesn't mean they're necessarily messing it up either. They might be doing really well with the limited resources they have.
How do you try to overcome emotions and things, even maybe even your own emotions, when you're counseling somebody? You have a team at John Moore Associates that kind of helps you come to these decisions.
Yeah, our investment processes are all designed to be run by a committee. So there's a whole group of us that meet every Monday that do a deep dive in the markets and look at our strategies. And then in my own personal finances, any major financial decision I make, I happen to be very lucky. My best friend that I've known since I was an infant, he and I are both financial planners. So if I'm going to make a big money decision, the first thing I do is I pick up the phone and I call him. I trust him. He knows my goals. He knows my values, like any good financial planner should know. And I bounce ideas off him to make sure I'm not doing something silly. And he's checked me a few times. He says, you know, I think in principle what you're doing is right, but have you thought about this, that, and the other? Or he'll slow me down and say, it sounds like you're getting a little hyped up about this, this decision. Why don't we slow down and remove the emotion? And that's a big part of our job. There's the technical financial parts, but I tell you, the biggest mistakes have very little to do with dollars and cents and a lot more to do with what's happening between your ears.
How about what's happened between married couples? There's a lot of emotion there, too.
Yeah, and that's a difficult part of our job, is trying to make sure we're honoring the goals and fears of both parties, because they can be quite different, what they want to accomplish with the money and what they're comfortable with. So that's a big part of our job. I always say we're probably about 25% marriage counseling, just to make sure that we're honoring both parties in the couple. And usually there's one financial spouse and one less, or one non-financial spouse. So part of our job is making sure we're bringing that non-financial spouse, who, it's not an area of interest, it's something that he or she has delegated to the spouse. You know, we got to get that person involved to make sure that their voice is heard and that they feel comfortable, because you might be delegating, you know, the finances to your husband or wife, but a lot of times that comes with a little bit of, you know, uncertainty of what are they really doing with the money and are we really on track? And we can bring some more confidence in a situation like that.
Talk to us about married couples, or let's just talk about business owners, because mm-hmm. there's a new tax structure for people that own their own business.
Yeah, so part of the new proposal definitely impacts business owners, specifically those who have what's called pass-through entities, which are S-corps, LLCs. Most small businesses fall in this category. So your favorite mom-and-pop restaurant, your favorite little nail salon, all those places are probably going to be these pass-through entities. And this new tax law is certainly not friendly towards them. So we talked about how those high-income earners will see a higher tax rate starting at a lower income level. That 39.6% tax rate's coming back, possibly. They also want to add a 3.8% surcharge to that for business owners who have over $500,000 of income as a married couple. So if you're a successful business owner and you're having a good year and you pass through income from the business as profit, you're going to not only pay the top tax rate of almost 40%, you're now looking at about 43.4% total tax because of this. And in addition to that, if you're a really successful business owner and you have $5 million or more, that's an additional 3% surcharge. So they just keep tacking it on and adding that up. And a lot of people, again, they'd say, oh, $5 million or more, you can afford it. I'd be careful about that kind of language and that impression, because, you know, we can all afford something, and that these taxes tend to work their way down the income brackets over time.
I can't help but think about the fact that we're talking about federal taxes. Mm-hmm. There are other taxes, namely New Mexico gross receipts tax, yep. which right now in Bernalillo County is 7.875, almost 8%. And I recently had Paul Gessing with the Rio Grande Foundation on, mm-hmm. and he was telling us that we have a windfall happening in New Mexico, because about $8 billion has been generated by the oil and gas industry,
right.
which goes directly to the New Mexico budget, primarily for education. But now we've gotten almost that much from the federal government as COVID relief. I mean, it sounds like the state of New Mexico might be able to reduce taxes a little bit.
Yeah.
But instead they talk about, yeah, we'll save this for a rainy day and keep things as they are.
My understanding, and I'm not positive on this, it's not, you know, I'm not as adept on this stuff as Paul, but I believe to get the federal funding, states had to promise not to give a tax cut or refund with the money.
Mm.
They wanted it to go towards government programs. So the state might be restricted there. And actually, from what I understand, they're actually talking about increasing taxes in New Mexico for high net worth people and high income. So, and you mentioned state taxes. That's worth keeping in mind. Let's imagine you live in California, where the top tax rate's over 13%.
Mm.
So we just talked about if you're a high-income business owner, you're at 46.4% federal tax on your top income. You had another 13% on that for state income. You're pushing up against 60% tax on that income. So it's definitely starting to add up when you put all these together.
I can't imagine counseling someone on how to invest when they're faced with these changes, Brian.
Yeah, I think it's the key thing is to keep in mind is no one ever went broke paying taxes. We like to say, you know, it shouldn't discourage you from going out and advancing your career, earning more income, opening that business and making it great, you know, really make a successful company and have high profits. I mean, these are people, again, taxes are symptomatic of God's provision. So if you're making over $5 million in your business, great, good for you. I can't imagine how much you've provided to your community and services and goods and how many employees you must be providing for if you have over $5 million of income. But this definitely takes more off the top from them. And what I look at, though, is as a business owner, I have a pass-through entity. Some of these taxes are relevant for myself and other small business owners. When I look at my financial decisions, I have to balance my lifestyle expenses, so money I spend on local goods, services, providers to fix my home, buy a car, you know, send my kids to school. I have lifestyle choices, but I also have giving choices. And every dollar that goes to taxes is a dollar that can't go towards spending on local goods and services or can't go towards charitable giving. So there's definitely trade-offs that happen with this. You start pulling this income out of the economy, and typically if it goes too far, you start to see impacts on the economy.
A lot of us are familiar with tax-sheltered investments like Roth IRAs, but there's going to be some changes now with those type of instruments.
This is an interesting one, and I'll try not to get in the weeds on this, but one thing that we often do, I mentioned before, that we've been accelerating income for some clients, knowing that tax rates right now are reasonable. That's something that we do by moving IRA assets to Roth IRA assets. When you do that, you take a tax liability now, and move assets into a Roth IRA where it will grow tax-free going forward if you hold it for 5 years or more. It's a great opportunity if you're in a low-income period. Let's go ahead and pay a tax now while we know our income's low and we know taxes are reasonable. They want to do away with that for high-income earners, but this is what was interesting. They didn't start that next year. They started in 2031. Well, why would you do that?
Yeah.
Well, because it actually encourages people to accelerate and do those Roth conversions now while they can, which helps them show that the program's going to be more funded so they can start to pass spending bills and show, oh, well, we have this extra funding from this category. So it's kind of a numbers game of trying to make any spending programs look more well-funded by these additional taxes. So they're delaying this restriction. So after 10 years, you know, we're going to make it harder for you to manage your taxes.
So, Brian, I guess I want to back up and say, okay, let's say you have $100,000 in a Roth IRA.
Mm-hmm.
You have it in there earning, and I don't know how internally you dictate where the investments are and all of those different things, but the money is growing non-taxable.
Right.
Because you've paid the tax now. Well, in 10 years, what happens? Do they just automatically start taxing that amount?
No, so that's not the way this works. So what it's saying is right now, no matter what your income, you can move assets from an IRA to Roth IRA, which, again, we like to do for those high-income people. So great. What a great opportunity. It's saying 10 years from now, you won't be able to do that anymore. So what that does is it incentivizes high income people to make that conversion over the next 10 years, which allows them to project higher tax income for the next 10 years while people make the jump from taxable to tax-free assets, which makes their programs look like they're actually well-funded when after 10 years, that funding is going to decline because people will no longer be making that rotation from taxable to tax-free. So it's just a goofy numbers game. Because keep in mind what they're doing here. The idea here isn't just to tax the rich just for the heck of it. There's a whole slew of federal spending programs they want to do, and they're looking for revenues. And there's this, I think, dishonest impression that we can tax the rich enough to pay for anything we want. And there's simply not enough income and assets with the most wealthy 1% that you can keep raising taxes with just that group and pretend that it's going to cover the trillions and trillions of dollars of spending that are proposed right now with new programs.
Brian, I think there's people that think the United States has probably the highest taxes in the world. That's not true either, is it?
No, if you look at where we are relative to other developed nations, so about 24-25% of our GDP, our economy, goes towards taxes. If you look at Germany, that's 39%. If you look at France, it's 45%. So what that tells you is there's certainly, we could be taxing our populace more, but what you have to realize is in Germany and France, that bottom income tier is not paying less than 1% of their income. They pay for these large social programs they have, which you can agree with or not agree with, but they have to pay for those, and they do it. They know they can't just take that from the rich. They have to go down to the upper middle class, or even the lower middle class. The taxes that they pay in those middle class levels is far higher than what we're used to paying here in America, where we've generally protected the middle class from taxes.
We're going to have one more segment with Brian Cochran. He is the owner and president of John Moore Associates, and he's also a certified Kingdom Advisor. Brian, I love all your biblical investment counsel. I'm going to, when we come back, we're going to talk about the new estate tax rules. We're going to talk about child tax credits to take us up to the top of the hour. But I'm going to say something as we go to this commercial break, and that is I probably shouldn't say this, but I tell you what, I'll save it. When we come back, we'll be back with Brian Cochran in just a couple minutes. We'll be right back.
Hi, this is Adam Holtz, and you're listening to Plugged In.
Cinderella, you don't need to go to the ball.
Please, stepmother, I spent weeks making this dress. My future depends on it.
In the latest version of Cinderella, now streaming on Amazon Prime, pop singer Camila Cabello puts her musical imprint on this classic fairy tale. The core story is familiar. Ella's been orphaned, and now she's at the mercy of her nasty stepmother and stepsisters. Will a chance encounter with the prince change her fortunes? Actually, in this modern reimagining, Cinderella's more interested in opening a dress shop. And the fairy godmother? She's a he dressed like a she. Some profanity and innuendo pop up in this PG film, too. So we're giving Amazon's version of Cinderella a 2.5 out of 5 for family friendliness. Read the full review at PluggedIn.com/radio. And be sure to check us out on Facebook and Instagram. I'm Adam Holtz for Focus on the Family's Plugged In Movie Review.
It's back. It's back. The Toby Mac Kids Deep Tour 2022. Oh, Lord, featuring Toby Mac with special guest Crowder, Kane, Cochran and Company, and Tarion. Friday, February 11th at Rio Rancho Event Center. Tickets available starting September 23rd. Save 20% for a limited time with the offer code INSIDER at AwakeningFoundation.com. Brought to you by Food for the Hungry and Altrua Health Share Ministries, an Awakening Foundation event.
Saturday nights at 8 and Sunday evenings at 6 p.m. The new show, Tracks of Light.
Get your eyes, see another world.
We trace back where we got on track with the light of Christ. Tracks of Light, locally sponsored by ThePlaceILike.com.
On KLYT, this is ABQ Connect with Jim Williams.
Brian Cochran with John Moore Associates always teaches us the biblical way to invest money, and I was going to joke around with him and say I wish he'd do a webinar for our people in Congress and the United States Senate, maybe even the president, on biblical spending principles.
Right, and there's a verse from Proverbs 21:20, in the house of the wise are stores of choice food and oil, but a foolish man devours all he has. So the idea there is don't spend every dime that comes in. Don't devour all you have. Set aside some for the future. And actually, one of the founders of Kingdom Advisors, Ron Blue, who's written some wonderful books on everything from Money 101 basics to inheritance planning, a great visionary and true student of Scripture, he actually spoke to Congress once and was, I mentioned before that biblical principles are transcendent. They work for people of all levels. They also work for businesses and they work for governments. You know, things like being wise about debt, something that we could all use a reminder on.
Well, I am quite a bit older than you, Brian. We won't mention how much, but it's time to start thinking about estate tax rules. What's happening with estate taxes?
Yeah, so estate taxes, of course, are the taxes that your heirs are in charge of paying when you pass away, and if you have too much money, the government gets a cut. And there's some states that have estate tax. What we're talking about is the federal estate tax. Another verse from Proverbs here, a good man leaves an inheritance to his children's children. So estate planning is biblical, and leaving something for your heirs is a wonderful thing. That was Proverbs 13:22. This was an area that a lot of people were concerned about because part of the Trump tax cuts gave a much more lenient estate tax policy where you could have a higher net worth without facing these estate taxes, which can be quite high. What we've seen so far in the tax reform proposed, and I won't get in the weeds on this because it can get extremely complex, is that they're trying to kind of remove some of the tools, trusts, and the complex estate planning strategies that we use as advisors and that estate planners apply for their clients. They're trying to get rid of some of those opportunities that would help shelter your estate from tax. So there's certain gift rules, there's certain trust structures, there's certain opportunities to transfer business shares to the next generation without having them subject to tax. And that's, you know, estate tax has been a huge political football for years where it gets, you know, moved back and forth. But it looks like they're definitely trying to make that part of this provision that they can take more off the top as people pass on and leave assets to the next generation.
Well, I get a kick out of your notes on the next topic, which is child tax credits. Essentially, parents would be paid for having children. I thought that was kind of funny.
Right. So the child tax credit's been around a long time, and it's also changed here and there. And so the child tax credit, first off, let's clarify, what's a credit, what's a deduction? A deduction is something that makes you look less wealthy in the eyes of the government. That's what I like to say. It makes you look like you have less income. And deductions are helpful. But a tax credit is much more valuable dollar for dollar than a deduction. So a $1 deduction is not worth as much as a dollar of credit because a credit is an actual credit against tax. It reduces your tax liability directly. And there's refundable credits and non-refundable credits. So a refundable credit is one that if I've already satisfied all my taxes, if I've already reduced my entire tax liability, a refundable credit means that I can actually get money back. I can actually get more back on my taxes than I ever paid in. So I might say, well, I paid $5,000 in income taxes in 2021. And then when I file my taxes next year, I can get all the credits and deductions to reduce that to zero. And a refundable credit would say, I actually walk away with a check for more than I ever paid in. A non-refundable credit says you can use your credit to reduce your tax liability, but you can't actually get extra back. So what we're looking at now, there was a special provision as part of the COVID relief that allowed a refundable credit on child tax credits at a higher level than we've seen in the past. And they want to continue that. So that's it'd be about basically $3,000 for children under the age of six. Oh, excuse me, over the age of six. $3,000 for over the age of six. If you have a child under the age of six, it's actually $3,600. And what they're starting to do is typically you would not see that credit hit until you filed your taxes, but they're actually starting to pay that monthly ahead of time. So if you qualify for it, you're actually getting monthly checks for each child you have if you're under the income thresholds. So again, this could be money way beyond the taxes you pay. And the only thing that some people disagree with on this, and actually I personally disagree with, I don't mind sharing, is I don't like refundable tax credits because there's no restriction on that money. You don't know if it's going to go towards food, childcare, healthcare, housing. It could go towards anything. It could go towards a vacation. It could go towards alcohol. It could go towards,
But Brian, I want to say it's not a windfall. It's not something that now you have this discretionary income you can just go spend. If you're getting an extra $250 or $300 a month, spend money in a godly way.
Exactly. You still want to use the same stewardship principles. So I just always struggle with refundable credits because it's just straight cash. And most people are very interested in helping the poor and the needy. That's why we give to nonprofits. We're comfortable paying towards those things. But I want to know that it's going towards a specific need that needs to be satisfied. So the other thing they have now is a child care credit. So if you have a child in daycare so you can go work, that's also a refundable credit, and it can go up to 50% of the expenses, up to $8,000 a year. So if you had $16,000 in child care expenses, you could get a credit for $8,000 of that back on your taxes. And if it's more than, if you've already eliminated all your taxes for the year, you could actually get a refund on that. So if you've got a couple kids, we're talking $8,000 of child care credit, and then somewhere between $3,000 and $3,600 per child per year of refundable credits. So you're talking thousands and thousands of dollars a year just going straight unrestricted right back to these taxpayers. And again, we already talked about low-income people are already paying less than 1% of their income to taxes.
But
like this would eliminate it to zero or even negative. They actually might get more from taxes.
And I haven't thought about this since I didn't know this was a thing. But it sounds like that would help a lot of lower income people, especially take care of their kids.
Yep. I guess the way I would approach it, and I think a lot of people agree with this mentality, is if you want to help people get childcare, then create programs that pay for childcare. Don't just give them cash. Or if you want to help young families, then provide programs for young families. But just giving them, you know, if you have three kids and you're getting $9,000 a year in child tax credits refunded, we don't know where that's going. That could go towards anything.
Would this be accurate, Brian? You're a Christian man. I'm a Christian man. We believe that we all sin. And you're really trying to figure out a way to prevent people from mishandling this money. And that's really how our government's been. The three branches of government were really designed to counterbalance sin and selfishness.
Right. And I would say, I'm trying to think of the best way to say this. I would say we want this money to go for people who have specific needs. And I think that's right. And I'm willing to pay more taxes if I know it's being stewarded properly by the government or whoever the government's giving that money to. Mm. I struggle with just saying, I'm going to pay $50,000 more in taxes next year so that we can just pass money out to these other families, you know, not knowing whether that's really going to be an opportunity to provide a better life for the children we're trying to help or to provide opportunities for people who have lower income. It seems like there's possibly better ways for that to be stewarded. And again, that's part of why we give to charity as a family, is we think that we can make better stewardship decisions than the government. So we give money to charities because we count on them to provide for the food needs, clothing needs, education needs of families who need it. Yeah.
Brian, why do you make all this free information available to the public through your website?
I think the media often has a bias or a twist they want to put on it. They want to either dramatize this information or skew towards one side or the other. So in our information, we're not trying to make a political point or pick one side or the other. We're trying to provide the data that we think is not provided to the public on a regular basis so that people can make more informed decisions. That might mean you and I totally disagree at the end of the day, but I'd at least like you to start with the right data. So if you're sitting there saying, oh, the rich pay more or pay less than the poor, no, they don't. They don't pay a lower percentage of their income. They don't pay a lower percentage of all taxes. Not even close. If from that knowledge of the truth, we can come to a conversation and decide what's the best percentage for everyone to pay, great. But I think so many people are going into these conversations and into these voting decisions and financial decisions with bad information. And so if we can help them with better information to make better decisions, I think everyone benefits.
And of course, the decisions that we make in the voting booth need to be informed decisions as well.
Right, right. And people often say, you know, that folks vote their pocketbook. So if you're sitting there looking at some of these tax provisions saying, hey, I'll benefit from all this, you might vote for one person or another. But I would also look at the bigger picture and, you know, see what's fair, what's honest, what's good stewardship from the government perspective.
You mentioned your friend that's got a little accountability with you and he with you. So I wonder if those kind of relationships are something that you would recommend for people to have. I don't know how we have a friend as knowledgeable as you are in these areas, but the data is available at your website, and there's a lot of other people, books and other resources people can refer
to. And courses. Look for opportunities for financial literacy in your church. With, you know, Dave Ramsey courses are out there with Financial Peace. There's Master Your Money is a great book by Ron Blue you can start with. There's ways you can empower and educate yourself to make better decisions.
Can you Google this and trust what you're getting?
No. The sources are too biased. If you want to go right to the source, right to the IRS website, right to the other sites like that and get the data, great. But be careful the articles you read.
Yeah. Brian Cochran, John Moore Associates, certified Kingdom Advisor and president of John Moore Associates. As always, thank you so much, Brian.
My pleasure, Jim.
ABQ Connect is presented by Bosky Heating and Cooling, 505-444-7200. Bosky Heating and Cooling, locally grown, locally owned. ABQ Connect with Jim Williams is a production of KLYT.
The views expressed on ABQ Connect do not necessarily reflect the views of staff or management at KLYT. If you missed any or part of today's show, the podcast can be found at abqconnect.online.